Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. In today's podcast, we're going to get to know portfolio manager Darren Lekkerkerker. Darren chats with host Emily Ananuevo about how he first got into investing and his investment approach that focuses on quality companies trading at reasonable valuations with shareholder-oriented management. For Canadian investors, Darren manages Fidelity North American Equity Class, a concentrated portfolio of high-quality companies in Canada and the U.S. Among a handful of other funds, Darren also manages the equities sub-portfolio that makes up about 50% of Fidelity Canadian Balanced Fund. Darren notes how he is maximizing company meetings while working remotely, is optimistic about 2021, and comments on how he is actively positioning his fund for today's market conditions. This podcast was recorded on February 2nd, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Darren, so happy to see you and glad you could be part of the show today.
Hi, Emily. I'm happy to be here.
So I want to begin with a bit about you. What sparked your passion for investing? And can you talk to us about your career path? Because I know you started out at a bank and then into private equity and then became a portfolio manager. What was your journey like?
So I can remember the day that I learned and became interested in the stock market. And so I was actually really young. I was 9 years old. Neither of my parents were involved in or interested in the stock market. I had these two cousins, and they had a distant relative on their side of the family that gave them shares. One got shares in Imperial Oil, and the other got shares in a gold company. And so it sparked this thought process, like, what's the stock market? What are shares? And so for my 10th birthday, my parents were like, what do you want? And, you know, like a bike or something. I'm like, no, like, I want to get in the stock market. So I got 5 shares of BCE for my 10th birthday. And like that really started the passion. It was the first stock I started to follow. And then when I was a little bit older than that, Peter Lynch was like probably him and Warren Buffett were the most famous investors in the world. And so Peter Lynch managed the Fidelity Magellan Fund out of Boston. So I read two of his books. I started reading Warren Buffett's annual letter. And from there, I guess I ended up during university working at a Toronto-based high net worth asset management and hedge fund called Guskin Sheff. I still have a good relationship with the CIO who's retired today, Ari Guskin. And from there, I worked in investment banking, private equity. I did my MBA in the U.S. at Wharton, and I joined Fidelity.
That's amazing. And, you know, you've been in the industry since 2004, I believe. But I didn't know you started out that young, 10 years old, 9 or 10 years old, you really became interested in the stock market. That's a really neat story. Darren, you've been on the show, you know, on our shows many times, and you've really articulated well, you know, your how you approach investing with a certain philosophy and strategy. So for our audience today, can you elaborate on your, you know, your approach to investing?
Sure. So I want to buy high quality businesses. And I say businesses, not stocks, because I think that you need to approach investing as to think that you are a minority owner in a business as opposed to buying a stock certificate. And so when I'm looking to buy businesses, I'm really looking for three things. Number one, I'm looking for a business that's very high quality. And so what am I looking for? I'm looking for a business that has an economic moat, which I would define as a sustainable competitive advantage. So Microsoft is the largest business I own in the North American Equity Fund. And so, you know, their moat would be like they have ownership of software. They have many businesses that have that software embedded that would be very high switching costs for us to switch from Microsoft to another platform. CP Rail is another large position for me. And so like they own a railway, right? Which has a monopoly on many parts of its business. The other, the quantitative factor I would look at in defining what's a great business is, does it have a very high return on its invested capital, which means that it generates a lot of cash flow per every dollar of capital that they invest in their business. Two, management. And so what I'm looking for management where their goal is to increase the intrinsic value per share and not to, you know, simply just pay themselves more. So one, I look at, are they aligned with us as shareholders? Do they own a lot of shares in the business? In terms of their pay, do they achieve their bonus by meeting goals that would benefit us as shareholders, like a higher return on invested capital or meeting other objective requirements. And then two, I look at what's their history of capital allocation. And by capital allocation, I mean investing the excess free cash flow that the business generates. And what have they done with it? And have they used it very smartly and invested it at a high rate of return? So for example, maybe they bought back shares when their shares were cheap, or maybe they bought a competitor if that was an opportunity available to them. That turned out well, or maybe they invested in a new plant and they didn't do dumb things. And then thirdly, valuation. So I think the price you pay is important, but I identify with Warren Buffett when he says that he'd rather have a wonderful business at a fair price than a fair business at a wonderful price. I think you do better over time owning that higher quality business that can compound its value over time. Just quickly on investment process, I spend a lot of time meeting with people who run companies, CEOs, CFOs, spend an hour asking them about their business trends that are going on, how fundamentals are changing, what they're seeing, what they're investing in, what's going on with their competitors. And then two, we have a really large team. I'm very lucky of analysts that support portfolio managers like myself. They tend to be experts in their sector. So for example, we'll have an industrials analyst, a software analyst, a tech hardware analyst, so on and so forth. And so I spend a lot of time talking with them and reading the notes that they publish. And then thirdly, I would say risk management. I think the goal is to have the 40 best businesses in the portfolio and to own them and have them compound and increase value for shareholders over time.
Yeah, and just the breadth of the research team here at Fidelity, you're absolutely right about that. Just curious to know, Darren, you know, that we're all working from home. Is it easier to set up those meetings with the CEOs these days? Have you sort of gotten to the groove of booking all those? Because I imagine that, you know, we all sort of have more time on our hands now that we're not traveling.
Yeah, it's a good question. And the answer is yes, right? I mean, it's so much, it is easier. And I was impressed at how seamless we transition from the sort of in-office world to the online stay-at-home virtual world. And so immediately our team set out and we had many meetings, and especially like last March when we were trying to figure out what was going on, and I think the CEOs were trying to do the same. It was invaluable to speak to people and say, you know, what do you think? What are you seeing in your business? The other point I'll make is, like, normally, like, sometimes I'll travel for meetings, and then I find that there's like, you know, two or three meetings you really want to do during a day, and you end up doing like five others just because you're in that place and you want to make sense. And now I just do those two or three meetings that I really, really want to do. And then I can do two or three meetings that are in another geography. So I tend to do more meetings and higher quality meetings.
Yeah. So interesting how everybody's, you know, process has changed a bit now that we're all here at home. So, you know, Darren, your approach to investing has led you to a lot of success, outperforming your benchmark and delivering strong returns for investors. I want to know if you can explain to our investors, what themes would you say have contributed to your success over the years?
Yeah. So, you know, I think really it's a couple of things. I think, so one, I think you really need to think in order to outperform, and generate absolute returns and also outperform benchmarks and other competitor funds. What are my best ideas? And you really need to make sure you own those in large size. And so I think that's one thing. And I think two, you need to be really careful that you cull your least best ideas and you don't just own everything. Because if you own like 100 stocks or 200 stocks, then your returns will look very much like the market over time. And it'll be hard to produce like superior returns for our shareholders. That's not really a theme, but it's more of a process. In terms of themes, like I think I've just owned high quality businesses that have been able to compound their free cash flow per share over time and increase value. And so Microsoft has been a really large position, which I mentioned earlier, and CP Rail, I gave them as examples of high quality businesses. You know, last year, you were asking me more over time, but like last year was a super, interesting year from a stock market perspective. I mean, obviously it's a bad year in a lot of ways, but from a stock market perspective, it really, made me think. And I think, for example, in March, April, when the market was down huge, I was looking like what's on sale. One of the areas that I went into a lot was consumer. Consumer stocks had been killed. They were priced as though we were going to have a very deep recession. However, as we now know, the Federal Reserve lowered rates, added liquidity. The government in both Canada, the U.S. Gave consumers money. And so you could see, okay, what are people going to spend on from home? And so I owned restaurants that had a strong delivery order pickup, like for example, like drive-through, as well as retailers that had strong brands with a strong omni-channel, so they could sell online, as well as companies that provided outdoor sports options. So I think those were on sale, and then they subsequently did well. Like that was one of the stronger themes that contributed to results last year.
Right. So now looking ahead to 2021, we're in it right now. How are you actively positioning your fund to capture much upside and as little downside in 2021? You just mentioned how last year you looked to companies that were sort of on sale. So what is your plan for 2021?
Right. I'm optimistic about 2021. I think that the conditions look good. And so I think, one, the interest rates continue to be low, and the Federal Reserve communication has been that they're going to maintain low rates. Two, the government is still sort of providing consumers with money. And so and that looks to increase with the Biden government in terms of federal stimulus. And then I would say three, I think we're all hopeful as a society that look, people are getting vaccinated. We're seeing the case counts, although they're high, they've been dropping in Canada, the US, and globally. And so I think I'm hopeful that leads to a normalization or something close to a normalization of our society. And I think that'll produce really strong earnings growth. And I think that it puts consumers in a good spot, right? I think if you're a consumer and you have an RSP or a 401k in the US, you feel good. Your house is up, your stock portfolio is up, interest rates are low. And for some people that are unemployed or on the lower end or middle end in the US that are getting checks from the government. So I think consumer spending should be strong. That looks attractive. One thing that's I'm a little bit cautious on is that valuations are high. And so I think it pays to be choosy in terms of what we're paying for, in terms of what the market is valuing stocks at. Having said that, if we look at what bonds are pricing like 1%. So, stocks look like incredibly good value relative to bonds. So some of the positioning of the portfolio, I mentioned I like the consumer. I see a lot of opportunities there in terms of a travel and leisure. I try to think about, myself and my wife and our family and like, what do we really miss doing? And, I think we have some pent up demand to travel. I think people are going to go to a party. They're going to need apparel. So these are some of the areas that I've been in. I also think that cyclicals like resources and industrials, as well as financials like banks, look a lot better. A lot of these were really hard hit in terms of the stocks last year in 2020, and fundamentals look a lot better. I mean, demand should recover as the economy reopens. In the case of commodities, I mean, supply is constrained in certain commodities like copper. Agriculture looks really strong with farmer incomes being the highest they are in the past 8 years. And I think broadly, some of the other areas, I don't really want to too much detail here, or I'll be here all day, so I can answer your question. I like technology. I think technology It's been a little softer since the vaccine, but I think there's a lot of good companies to pick from here. I think it's still worth. And another area that I've really liked is the information services area. And I think it's companies who develop and sell data. It's not cyclical. There's like a long tail to their growth. There's strong incremental margins and a lot of free cash flow.
Right. So real round, well-rounded perspective there. You mentioned agriculture and technology. And, you know, you mentioned the consumer as well. And it's really interesting that you mentioned just considering the level of pandemic frustration. I mean, we've all been in this situation almost a year. So really interesting to see how the consumers' behaviors are going to change this year, right? You also mentioned vaccines in there as well, Darren. Vaccines, you know, are being rolled out. So just curious to know, are the vaccine rollout, is this affecting any opportunities you're looking for in your portfolio?
Yeah, 100%, right? Because I think the vaccines are going to determine the reopening, both the speed of the reopening and, you know, how does the world look, right? Like once we're all vaccinated. So, you know, definitely I've been thinking about like the different vaccines, and we got data on two new vaccines last week, right? The J&J and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as well as the Novavax vaccine. And we're getting data on how they do on some of the new variants of COVID, right? In South Africa and the UK. And so on and so forth. So, look, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a healthcare specialist. But I think my view is that broadly, we're going to reopen this year, and I think that the end of this year is going to look a lot different than it does today. And I think that should be for the better. And so, absolutely, it influences my stock choices and businesses I find attractive, because I think that there are some businesses that have depressed earnings now, we should really recover. And so one interesting thing I'm thinking about, I'm doing a lot of work on consumer, is the pent-up demand of the consumer, as well as the shifting wallet share. What are you spending on now that you may not, because you're stuck in your home, that you might want to when you're out of your home? And I mentioned travel and leisure. And so I think some of these businesses may actually have pricing power, meaning that they may be able to charge higher prices after the pandemic than before the pandemic, because everyone may want to use their service or buy their product. So that's an area that I find fascinating and I'm doing a lot of work on.
How do currency movements impact the way you invest?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so for the North American Equity Fund, just first off, it's 70% invested in the US and 30% in Canada. Look, I think that it's really hard to predict currency movements accurately over time. It kind of seems like in the short term, it seems like the US dollar has been coming down, the Canadian dollar has been going up. Logically, that makes sense, just given that the US dollar tends to be a sort of less cyclical currency, just given their economy is less cyclical, and also the market. When the market goes sort of risk off, the US dollar tends to go up, and when it goes risk on, people are buying more stocks, it tends to go down. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that continues, but it's not something where I'm trying to generate a ton of alpha for the fund, just because I don't think that I or really anyone else is the best at predicting currencies over time. And I kind of talked a little bit earlier about my process of the types of companies I like and how I try to find them. I try to stick to that. And the reason is because I think that it's the most repeatable, and therefore gives me an edge over the market and other market participants in order to generate sort of sustainably good performance over time.
And you mentioned the equity fund there, that 70-30 split. Curious to know, any pockets of opportunity specifically in Canada you're keeping an eye out on for in them?
I think Canada does well in the reopening, right? Look, Canada is more cyclical than the US, right? I mean, by that, I mean, we have, as a stock market and an economy, we have more exposure to economies that tend to go up and down more with the business cycle, like materials, energy, banks. And so I think as a result, Canada should do a little better even in the reopening. And so I like that I have that exposure to Canada. I think in the long term, I think the US is a great market to be. It has higher exposure to growthier sectors like technology and healthcare that have a lot of high quality growth companies. I also think that U.S. is a big market. They tend to give a lot of cash flow back to investors in the form of dividends or share buybacks. So, you know, look, I like the setup of the fund. I like to have the some Canadian exposure. And I think that, you know, longer term, I think the fund should do well. That does revert at some time back towards the US.
In 2020 and 2021, discipline, sticking to your convictions and focusing on the long term, despite the ups and downs, have been and will be key, I would say. And financial advisors add so much value in these particular areas. You know, Darren, what helps you stay disciplined and focused through all sort of the market up and downs?
I think it's really hard, Emily. And so my goal, look at last week, look at the ups and downs we had, like, day to day, last week. Like, last week was just a really volatile week. And so for me, like, look, my goal is to try to just be very stable, try to, you know, dull any natural emotions I may have, and try to add value through the volatility. So for example, last week I had some stocks that I own that were down a lot for no apparent reason. And so I added to them, and I had some stocks that were up a lot for no apparent reason. I thought, I'm going to sell this stock and add a little to this other one. So look, I think that I'm trying to add value through that. And then two, another thing I would say that I do that really helps is, like, look, we really know our stocks. And so I think if it's just a stock and you see it go down, you get really worried. But if you've done your work and you're like, okay, like, I've actually talked to the CEO multiple times, our analyst is an expert on this sector, this stock. They have a financial model, which they forecast the income statement, balance sheet, and cash flow statement. And I have a simple thesis, like, which is like two sentences on this stock, which is like, you know, maybe it's something like, hey, they're going to get higher pricing this year, higher volumes, and incremental margins, which is going to really increase cash flow beyond what people think this year, for example, something like that, then it's easier to stick to it and have conviction in that thesis when you see your stock down 6% on no news and you don't know why.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about a lot of fiscal spending. How's that sort of changing your approach this year?
Yeah, I think that's an issue on both sides of the border in Canada and the US. And like, I think the answer is we don't really know how it's going to impact us, but I don't think that the impact is going to be borne this year. You may see higher taxes in Canada. You may see higher taxes in the US. I think in the US, they may not come this year. I think that, you know, typically when the economy is still in a recovery, it's not usual that the federal government raises taxes, although it has been part of both Prime Minister Trudeau and President Biden's platform. So I guess we could get a little bit. I think down the road, inflation is a risk, but I don't think that's a risk today if you have too much government debt and deficit. And so that's something to keep an eye out for. But I don't think it's a big risk today. I do think that if it does happen, it actually could benefit some areas of Canada, like the resource sector, as well as the Canadian dollar.
Coming towards the end of the show, and I just wanted to switch gears a bit quickly and ask you, if you weren't a portfolio manager, you know, what would you be doing, do you think?
I wish I had some crazy answer for you. Like, I would have tried to be a rock star or, you know, like a mountain guy. But, you know, I mean, look, like, when I was a kid, my dad owned a small business, and I actually worked there from ages 10 through 20. I worked in a warehouse, and look, it made a big impression on me as a kid, and I was lucky to learn about business from my dad at a young age. And so probably I would be an entrepreneur or trying to do something entrepreneurial.
There you go. Okay. And one last question, Darren, you know, if there's one message you'd like to leave.
What I would leave investors with is just, hey, first off, like, just thank you so much for your support. I mean, if you're in either of my funds, Fidelity Canadian Balance Fund or Fidelity North American Equity Fund, or even other, honestly, funds with us, like, you know, I really appreciate it sincerely from my heart. Like, please know that I am, like, working as hard as I can, and I appreciate it. And then also for the Fidelity North American Fund, I'm actually the largest retail shareholder in the fund, so I'm aligned with the other shareholders here. And like, for me, I'm doing that to like, it's the largest asset I have in my life. And like, every year I tend to put more of the money I earn from work in that fund, and I'm doing it to save up for my own family's retirement. And so I'm aligned well. And other than that, I think the fund is well positioned. I like what I own, and I like that. I like that 30% Canada, 70% US split. I think it makes a lot of sense for Canadian investors, particularly now. I think it's timely right now with the reopening. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. And don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.